Hello, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovations in the STEAM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields at the local, national, and international levels. Today, I'm thrilled to be talking with 16-year-old Anisha Dute of Oregon. Anisha is the winner of the 2025 Gloria Barron Prize for Young Heroes, and she's here to tell us about her groundbreaking project called Smart Carbon Recycling. This initiative uses a kelp-based fertilizer, carbon-rich biochar, and a machine learning tool called Earth AI to improve soil health and help fight climate change. Anisha, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you feeling?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be on this podcast and I'm super excited.
Yeah, me too. To start off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? What kind of first sparked your interest in science and climate issues when you were younger? I understand you began doing your experiments on climate change as early as 9.
Yeah, so it all started almost 8 years ago, and it was around when I was like 9 years old, and I would just hear debates in the news about whether global warming was real or not, and that kind of sparked my curiosity, and that led me to finding out for myself if it was real or not. And I did the simple experiment, and it turned out to be real, of course. And from there, it just like my curiosity took me further. I kept researching. But then after some time, I figured out that like just researching isn't gonna do anything. To make a real impact, I need to like actually create solutions to mitigate climate change, and all these other problems. And that's when I came across kelp seaweeds. And I would always see kelp on the coast, like in the beaches, whenever I would like go visit. And I would always think it's like so gross, and like I'd want to like stay away from it, but like after doing some research, I found out that like it actually has some amazing properties. It's able to sequester carbon directly from the atmosphere, which is amazing. And it's not super well known either. And kelp is super abundant, it grows really rapidly as well. So, after doing some research and finding out about all of this, I decided to create some innovations, and it all started with the kelp seaweed fertilizer that I created called Kelp NutriBoost. Its main ingredient is kelp, of course, but it has other like ingredients that help with the soil and plant growth. And after combining all of this stuff, after multiple trials and errors, like of course I'm making it seem like it was a very simple process, but in reality it was like a really long process. It took a really long time, more than a month, multiple months. I was just like testing on different plants because I wanted to make sure that it worked on not just one plant, but like multiple. And after getting like amazing results and being satisfied with the results, I decided that it was like good. And after that, I like went on to creating a machine learning model. And when I first started, I knew I wanted to incorporate some type of machine learning into my project, but I wasn't just sure how. And I was like super new to like Python and like advanced coding. Like the most I'd done was like HTML, and that was just like basic like coding. So like over the summer, I learned Python on my own, and I coded this machine learning model that's like it selects the best crop to grow based on soil and environmental data. Yeah, it took me a whole summer of just trial and error. There was multiple like times I had to like go back, fix stuff. After creating it, like both of those innovations, they work together in a way. It's kind of like a whole cycle. Like you use the machine learning model to select the best crop to grow, and then you can use the kelp seaweed fertilizer to help the crop grow even better. And if like the soil is sort of degraded, kind of just like fixing that and putting the fertilizer to the ground. So it's mostly directly to like communities that could really use this. Yeah, that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah, I mean, the way it went is so like kind of incredible how it just started off of a curiosity and then spiraled into this whole thing. And I know that you talked about learning Python. Could you kind of explain more? How was that process for you? And how did you go from learning programming on your own to then applying it in the research? Because I know you just talked about it a little, but maybe expand.
Yeah, it was a very tedious process, I'd say, because when I first started, like I knew what it was, but like I was completely new to it. I
Python
had,
is not easy. I've tried learning it. It is not easy at
it was a really long process of just learning it, especially since I was doing it independently. It was like a lot of trial and error. Like a lot of the times I got like stuck and then like spend the night just like trying to fix those problems and figure that out. But yeah, after finally learning it, it was really fun creating the machine learning model. It was a long process, but it was definitely worth it at the end, I would say.
Yeah, and I know you just talked about kind of like on your own, but I know going through this process, have you had any mentors or role models throughout the years that have helped?
For sure, yeah. It all started with I was named one of America's top 10 young scientists. I participated in
Yes.
the 3M Young Scientist Challenge, and I met my very first mentor through that challenge, and he helped me a lot throughout the entire journey. His name is Dr. Rohit Gupta, and he's helped me tremendously. Also, my parents are huge supporters. They've helped me through the entire process, like whenever I needed something, especially since all my testing and everything was at home. I never like did anything in a lab setting. It was all at home by
Oh,
myself. So
wow.
like
Yeah.
testing on different plants and everything, like that was all in my backyard. And they helped me through that entire process a lot. Of course, like I've worked with a couple of professors. I did this internship with a professor at the University of British Columbia, and we kind of did this project on biochar, and that's how it got incorporated into my project as well. So yeah, I've definitely had a bunch of mentors throughout my entire journey, and they've helped me
Yeah.
so much.
The 3M Young Scientist Challenge, were you already working on smart carbon recycling back then, or was it more of a different idea?
I went into that competition just with like a simple idea. I hadn't done anything before it. Like I knew about kelp seaweeds. Like the simple experiment to
Yeah.
like prove that carbon dioxide was real was before that. And that's what like sparked my curiosity. And that's when I came across kelp seaweeds. And with that, I knew I wanted to do something to mitigate global warming and a bunch of other problems.
Yeah,
And kelp
yeah.
seaweed, its properties aren't just like mitigating global warming. It's also able to, like, once put into the soil, since it's super carbon rich after absorbing all of the carbon from the atmosphere, it's really good for the soil and plants because carbon is the backbone of chemical life on Earth. So I knew I wanted to do something with kelp seaweeds because it had so many amazing properties. I kind of just took the idea, and through that challenge, I was able to kind of expand on the idea and make it something real.
Yeah. So I know you've talked a ton about your current project, so let's kind of shift gears to that.
Yeah.
Could you explain in your own words what smart carbon recycling is and why you chose that name? I think that's always kind of fun to see, like competing in science for myself and then seeing others like why they chose names and all of that.
Yeah, of course. So I chose that name because I feel like carbon is very like negative. Like when you
Yeah.
think of carbon, it ha kind of has like a negative meaning to it, because carbon, like when you think of carbon, you like think of like climate change and all these like huge contributions to all these negative impacts. And I kind of just wanted to take carbon and turn it into something positive. So basically you're recycling the carbon from the atmosphere where it's contributing to global warming, and you're recycling it and making it something positive and having like a positive impact on this earth. And basically smart carbon recycling, it involves carbon's journey from the
Yeah.
atmosphere to sea to soil. Because, like I mentioned before, carbon is the backbone of chemical life on Earth, and it's the most critical macronutrient essential for plant growth. So, yeah, it's basically just taking carbon from the atmosphere, and then because of the kelp that sequesters it from the atmosphere, it's taking it and putting it into the soil as like the kelp fertilizer, because the kelp fertilizer, of course, has the kelp seaweed in it.
Yep.
And because of it, it's super, super carbon rich. And putting that into the soil and basically recycling it and turning it into something useful to help increase crop yields and soil nutrition and keep the soil healthy.
I know then you mentioned the biochar and all of that mixing in with your kelp neutro boost. What kind of improvements did you observe when you combined the kelp neutro boost with the biochar? Did you test this on plants and different soil samples? Because I know you did a bunch of different plants. I don't know if you combined it those though. I was interested to see.
Yeah, so I did this internship with, like I mentioned
Yeah,
previously as
yeah.
well, I did this internship, came across biochar, and biochar has some amazing properties as well. It's super carbon rich, just like kelp. So that kind of just clicked in my mind, and I knew that I wanted to do something with it. So, of course, I combined it with the kelp fertilizer and it maximized its efficiency by almost 80%, which is incredible. And I did test it on multiple different plants, including hot pepper, green pepper, eggplant, all of these like different vegetables. And it showed incredible results on all of these different plants. So,
I think that's so cool to see mixing different nutrients and seeing how it can improve even more what you have done. And I know we just talked about the kelp and the biochar, which that brings us to your third major component, your AI tool called Earth AI. This stands for, if you don't know, Environmentally Aware Revolutionary Technique for Harvesting. Could you tell us why you decided to build a machine learning model as part of your project, and what role does Earth AI play for farmers that might potentially use your fertilizer?
as like time goes on, I feel like AI is becoming a bigger part of our lives, and you know it has many like negative connotations, just like carbon. Like when you think of AI, you probably think of like the very harmful environmental impacts it has and all these other things, but I wanted to use it for something positive, so that's why that's when I knew like I wanted to do something with AI machine learning and kind of use it for like a positive impact.
Something impactful rather than something
Yeah,
not,
for sure. So I knew that I wanted to create something impactful, and I also wanted to connect it to my fertilizer, which I created before that. So I decided to create this model that takes like soil and environmental data that you can easily measure with just like simple sensors, and you just input all of that data and it gives you like the best crop to grow, and it connects to the fertilizer as well, because once you know what crop to grow, you can use the fertilizer to help it grow even better, and help with like soil nutrient density, crop yields. So it kind of connected really well with what I had previously done. It took a long time, of course. I had to input a bunch of data. Most of the data was found through like online data sets, but I also like took some of my own data, and yeah, it was a long process, but it was a really fun process too, and definitely worth it.
I read that you trained Earth AI on a data set with over 17,000, right, environmental parameters, and then with that achieved 99% predictive accuracy. How did you
Yeah.
gather and work with such a large data set?
It was definitely a lot of data that I had used for that model. Most of it was online data sets because that is a lot of data to just get on my own. And I use this online data set website. It has like data for like multiple different things. It's called Kaggle. And I took some data from there. And then I also took data from like my own experiments and stuff. And I kind of just combined all of that into one model. And yeah, after using a lot of data, I was able to achieve over 99% accuracy. It also included like trying different models, and but at the end, I was able to achieve a pretty high accuracy. So it's pretty cool.
I think it's fantastic, and then having so much data, though, to have such a precise accuracy is even like cooler to me, I think. This is Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Anish Du, and we'll be right back.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Anisha Dute, and we are back. So your project covers quite a range from biology to chemistry to computer science. How did you manage to develop all these components?
So it does fall under a lot of categories, because different parts of the project, since it's made up of so many different parts fall under different categories. Like biochar falls under chemistry. There's like a biology component, machine learning. There's also like environmental science, of course. So it does fall under a bunch of different categories. But going into the project, I didn't like think of a category that I just wanted to stick under, like stick in. I kind of just wanted to create a project that had a real impact, And yeah, I started with just environmental science and, climate change, and it kind of just expanded from there. It was all step by step. I guess that was a technique that I used. I like didn't do all of it at once, of course. This is a process that spanned. I started in 8th grade. So I've been working on it for over like 5 years. So it was
Oh,
definitely
wow.
like a long process.
Yeah.
And I like slowly like added different parts to it. Yeah, it was a very step-by-step process, not all at once, and it was very like organized, I'd say.
And I feel like that's what makes it such a good project, though, is it's not focusing on one exact thing, is bringing in the components, and especially like the future AI, and just creating something even bigger than maybe a garden, per se.
Yeah,
Were
for
there
sure.
any major challenges or surprises over the 5 years that you encountered along the way?
That's a good question. Major surprises?
Or maybe like something didn't go away that you predicted?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Multiple times actually. When I was creating my fertilizer, there were multiple times where like the pH was too low or it wasn't showing the results that I necessarily hoped for. So after like adjusting like different parts of the fertilizer and all of that, I finally got the results I hoped for. But it wasn't always like a uphill, like there were many
Yeah.
like downhills and throughout the journey. I had to like consult with like different like professionals in like those fields, and they kind of gave advice to me and like told me which direction I should go in. Even for the machine learning model, it wasn't all like uphill.
Yeah.
I definitely had to like fix a bunch of things. Many things went wrong because I was so new to it. But after like not just giving up and like actually learning from my mistakes, I was able to learn so many new things, and ultimately like it all worked out at the end, and I was able to create the innovation that I hoped for.
Yeah, I know you mentioned the pH. How did you kind of go about that and troubleshoot it?
So when I was testing my fertilizer, my kelp-based fertilizer, in its very early stages, it was just on tomato plants. And that's like what I started with. And I went into it like very new. Like I didn't
Yeah.
know much about like the pH and all the soil components. I just like tested it. And I didn't really get the results that I hoped for. Like it didn't really like do much. So I like did some more research, and I figured out that pH of like the soil that I was using was too low. And after like doing some research and figuring that out, I didn't know what to do because I was so new to it. So I like reached out to some professionals in like the fertilizer field and like plant like farmers and
Yeah.
stuff. And they all gave me really good advice on how to like lower the pH and kind of go from there. And
Yeah,
they just gave me really good advice.
because it's even a different variable that's not your kelp nutrio boost could be affecting it. It's having to figure out how a plant thrives on its own before even having your factor into it, which I think is,
Yeah, for sure.
yeah, and like you could be doing everything right on that end, and like you said, the pH of the soil could be different, and that. Did you have trouble with like maybe watering too much or sunlight when you first started out or any of those things or not really?
I don't think I had a problem with that because like watering, like it was all on our own. I
Yeah.
like physically went and like watered each
Watered
plant.
them?
So
Yeah.
like yeah, it wasn't like sprinklers or anything where it was like
Yeah.
too water. Also like in our backyard, like we have a bunch of trees and stuff, so it wasn't like too much sunlight either.
Gotcha.
So like I kind of like narrowed it down, and the problem was either the fertilizer or the soil. And like I kind of like looked back at like the fertilizer's ingredients and stuff, and it seemed fine. So I kind of just like went from there,
Process of
and
elimination, yeah.
yeah, and I saw that like the soil might have been the problem, and I did some more research. I tested the soil and I figured out that it was actually the problem. And it wasn't something I expected, of course. Like I thought it would all go by my plan and just like
Yeah.
work out, Like I just thought like the fertilizer was gonna like fix it, no matter what. But in reality, like you said, like there are many other components to it. And after finding out like the soil was the actual problem, that kind of changed my mindset, and I like started looking at other things, not just like
Oh
focusing on one.
yeah. Trying to see like a well-rounded instead of just what you are doing. Yeah. So the goal of smart carbon recycling is to help with small-scale farmers and improve climate resilience, particularly in places facing soil degradation. Who are farmers or regions you hope to help the most with your innovations? For example, are you thinking of farms in Oregon or maybe farms in developing countries?
I hope to help farms all over the world, honestly, but if I specifically I'm like aiming to help farmers in particular in developing countries that don't have like the best soil and don't have access to the best tools and that could really use it because these innovations that I've created, they're not only like super useful for like those farmers, but it's also super low cost. So I feel like
So
that also plays a
affordability,
huge, yeah, it plays a huge role into the whole situation because my fertilizer is only $14 per gallon and the machine learning model, like I feel like anyone could use it once I get it out
once
to the
you
world.
develop
So
it.
yeah, so that was a huge like component of my innovations. Like I definitely wanted to keep it low cost and affordable for farmers, as well as like another factor was many of the fertilizers that we find commercially, they have like a bunch of like chemicals and other like things that are harmful for the soil and for plants in it. And I wanted to create something that was completely organic. So my fertilizer is completely organic, low cost, seaweed based. So yeah, there were a bunch of things that I kept into account while creating the fertilizer and machine learning model. And yeah, I hope to get it one day. Like I'm in the process of patenting it. And I hope to get it to like farmers and communities that could actually use it.
How has that process been going for you, patenting it?
It's definitely a long process.
I've heard it's
It's been
tricky.
going. It is definitely tricky, yeah.
Have you dealt with any like bumps along that or not? Has it just been just a long process?
It's just been a long process.
That's what I've,
Yeah.
yeah. So, how does your systems help with climate resilience? Is it mainly by regenerating soils and subsequencing carbon, thereby making farms more productive and climate friendly, or maybe is it something else that you were thinking?
It helps in many different ways. It sequesters carbon from the atmosphere, of course, so that helps. That's a huge fa like factor in mitigating climate change. Another part of it is food insecurity. I feel like climate change and food insecurity, they're pretty related. And kelp seaweed, it's not only able to mitigate climate change, but it's also able to help with food insecurity because of how carbon rich it is. So it helps with that. And then biochar helps with plastic pollution, another huge problem, because biochar is created through a chemical process called microcatalytic pyrolysis. And it's like it comes from like sewage waste, plastic pollution, like all the plastic, and it's turned into biochar and like other like byproducts. Yeah, so it kind of helps that way.
But on a practical level, kind of finishing up the segment, as you finish high school, what are you thinking about next? Are you planning to continue developing this project in college or start new projects? And how has, I know you're only 16, but college planning kind of factored into what you want to study?
I do hope to continue this project because I know how important it is for the world, and I feel like climate change, like as time goes on, it's just getting worse and worse. And scientists say if we don't reach net zero by 2050, like there's no going back. It's just gonna continue to get worse. So I feel like it's so important today, and I'm planning on continuing it, expanding it, and hopefully one day getting the products to like people and farmers who actually could use it in, on a real note. I do plan on potentially starting new projects as well on the side. But yeah, I hope to continue this project throughout college and yeah, expand it.
Do you have any other, like I know you mentioned that you might be starting projects. Do you have any ideas for what you want to start, or is that all up in the air, like in the future?
It's kind of up in the air in the
It's just
future.
like that curiosity. You want to do
Yeah, but
more.
I do hope to like not just like stick to this, but like kind of maybe like connect it to like some other like huge problem and integrate it
I
all
know.
into one. Yeah.
Because this is a huge problem on its own, and I think having people have these initiatives so young is what's going to make it by 2050. So I think starting this is great. Let's broaden out a bit. Your work touches on many big themes: climate change, sustainable agriculture, artificial intelligence, and youth leadership, which I know you just said you want to reach out on different things. What do you think it's important for young people to be involved in solving climate change and technologies, especially so we don't reach zero by 2050?
Okay, so I feel like it all starts with like education. I feel like it's so important to educate and empower like the youth to take action and like understand these problems, but not just understand them, like actually taking action and solving these problems. 'Cause I've noticed like throughout my entire like school career, I'd say like climate change and all these environmental problems, they aren't really talked about. And I feel like the very first step is talking about them and actually like, yeah, like
Realizing.
bringing it to awareness. And I've after that, like actually empowering like kids to take action and like starting with like the simple things of like saving electricity or not littering, like simple
Turning
things
your
that
water
could,
off when you're brushing your teeth,
yeah,
right?
exactly, just like simple things that anyone can do on like a daily basis to help with their contributions to global warming, because ultimately like global warming is caused by like all of us humans like contributing to it. So if even one of us like stops, like there's like a little bit
That can
less that's
still make an
contributed to it.
impact.
Yeah, it still makes a huge impact. And I feel like kind of like bringing on like the butterfly effect, like if one person stops doing something, like maybe that's gonna like inspire like other people to stop doing that. And like it just like expands on like an even bigger note. So I feel like that's kind of like a good place to start. And from there, like kind of just like expanding on that and like maybe like bringing it to other people's awareness and yeah, just like
Really
talking
starting
about
at
it
the
more.
foundation. Starting at the foundation, the core of the problem is really reaching awareness and trying to get access, like you said, for people to realize that their actions really do play a part in something, even if they're one person. Them, like you said, keeping on a light, doing those things really does affect the environment and realizing how our actions can change that. And I think that's a beautiful message. Well, Anisha, this has been an enlightening conversation. Your smart carbon recycling project is an inspiring example of how science, technology, and creativity can come together and address climate change and support farmers. Thank you to everyone listening. Stay tuned for more episodes of Teen Scientists and keep exploring the science around you.